Is this a bigger challenge even than you anticipated with the pandemic, with all that's going on and what you've had to overcome?
No, I think every football season's a big challenge in one way or another. And changing teams after a long period of time, it's been different having the opportunity, over this time to, move and then to, for example, study my playbook. I mean, I really haven't had to do that in 19 years. So, you forget, man, that's really tough.
It's never easy to start a new job, even when you're Tom Brady. The 19-year veteran of the New England Patriots has a whole new system to learn in Tampa Bay. Today, an up-close, well, socially distanced look at how Brady is adapting. Plus, learn what it's like to memorize a new team playbook from an NFL quarterback who's done it 16 times, Josh McCown. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, August 10th. This is ESPN Daily. Hey, Jenna, thanks so much for joining me in the middle of a move. That is a lot to process at the same time.
Oh, absolutely. I appreciate you having me. Thankfully, we are not doing this on video, though, because there are boxes behind me. All wall ornamentation has been removed, so they're looking quite bare. And I am swimming in a bunch of electronics.
ESPN football reporter Jenna Lane has covered the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for more than a decade, and she's not leaving town, just moving down the street. Another person who had to make a move fairly recently, Tom Brady, is kind of like the new kid transferring high schools in his senior year, I guess. Like, doesn't quite know where everything is, maybe doesn't know who to go to for what. So my first question is just, how has Tom Brady been getting situated in your city?
It's been quite interesting. He has, in my opinion, he's doing all the things right, with the exception of, getting kicked out of a public park and accidentally walking into the wrong home. Well, he didn't know. I get it. The stay-at-home order, was a little iffy because it does allow for outdoor recreation. So it just so happened that the city of Tampa parks were closed. So I'm not going to fault him for that. Brady, his backyard is water. Because he posts oftentimes like a nightly sunset photo, and I kind of feel like, man, that was my thing for a while. And his view is better than mine. So, yeah, he kind of beats me at that. But he's adjusting to Tampa pretty well. He's still trying to figure out where things are. And in fact, he's still trying to figure out where things are in his own facility because, he hasn't even been there 2 weeks now. Like, last week was his first week in the facility. He still doesn't know where their meeting room is. He still doesn't know where the quarterback room is. And I'm not going to lie, I don't either, because of the way they've just completely moved everything around in that facility because of COVID-19 and social distancing. I wouldn't recognize what the inside of it looks like either.
We heard Brady do something that I don't think anyone has heard him do, which is bemoan the challenge of learning a playbook. And he did this last week, Jenna, and you had a story about this on ESPN.com. So tell me what specifically has been so difficult for Brady to grasp about this playbook and why.
It's really the terminology. Like, every offense, it's a copycat league, right? And so there are bits and pieces of every offense. And these coaches, these play callers, will get inspiration from other coaches. But the terminology is the confusing part. So it's like learning an entirely new language.
So how different has all of this been compared to what you would have seen from a regular season?
Well, right now, we're essentially kind of seeing OTA stuff, even though they reported to training camp and everything. The workouts that we're seeing now, they're not doing any 11-on-11s or really 7-on-7s. They're just kind of throwing the ball around, right? And, guys are catching passes against air, and they're making sure everybody's in good physical shape. And the guys that weren't able to spend the time during the pandemic down here, they're still kind of adjusting to the elements and adjusting to the weather, which Tom Brady actually, he Instagrammed a post about Tampa's weather yesterday because it was 95 degrees. And I'm like, yep, that is August in Tampa for you.
So Jenna, there are some really high expectations for this team. There's even Super Bowl contender talk being heard around your parts. So let's talk about the team Brady's stepping into. And I'd like you to tell me first about the Buccaneers at quarterback after this whole carousel of guys at the position that preceded the arrival of Tom Brady.
Well, first and foremost, the Bucs have still never drafted a quarterback where they have signed him to a second contract. There was some hope that Jameis Winston might be the guy, but obviously he wasn't. They parted ways with him. He's now with the New Orleans Saints. But since I have covered this team, which I started covering the team in 2007, and now we're going on 2020. I mean, I've covered everybody from Jeff Garcia, or actually I interned in 2006, if you want to consider that. But I mean, they've had Jeff Garcia. Before that, they've had, you know, they had Brian Griese. They've had Brad Johnson. They've had Chris Sims. Byron Leftwich, their offensive coordinator, once played for them. Josh Johnson, who has just had an unbelievable career. He's on the Josh McCown route as far as being able to literally like just play for what seems like every team in the NFL. Like it blows my mind how many stops that guy has had in his career. Josh Freeman, they had high hopes for him. That didn't work out. Josh McCown himself, they had him. So they've had a lot of quarterbacks and they really just have never had stability at that position. And of course, they're not going to have a lot of long-term stability at the position with Brady, but they've certainly never had a guy like Brady. And then you look at the weapons that he's going to be getting. Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, two 1,100-yard receivers, two Pro Bowl wide receivers, and neither of them finished the season either because of injuries. So those 1,100 yards came from not even playing 16 games each. They're a young team. They don't have a lot of postseason experience. Actually, few guys have played in the postseason at all. You know, they're young, they're talented, and I think that they have the right mentality. They just, it's really going to boil down to how do they handle being in the spotlight? How do they handle playing under the microscope?
So the offense is stacked and has so much going on, but the defense is far more unknown, I think, to the casual NFL fan. So what do you find promising on the other side of the ball?
A lot of things. Shaq Barrett, the season that he had this past year, 19 and a half sacks. And it's funny, I was talking to Chandler Jones at the Pro Bowl, and he's like, man, every single week I was checking in on that guy, and he just couldn't beat him. And the thing is Barrett, he signed a one-year, a very low deal last year. Is just kind of, you know, took a chance. And I mean, this is a guy that was playing in the fourth preseason game, and he goes from that, like he's fighting for a job, he's fighting for a roster spot. He goes from that to 19 and a half sacks in a year. But once JPP came back, because of course he had the neck fracture last year, and you got to see both of those guys out there on the field together, you really started to see that pressure build. Levante David is a guy that, he's one of the best players in the NFL that nobody knows about because he's a quiet guy. He goes about his business. But if you ask anybody in that locker room, he is the heart and soul of this team. It's a young secondary, but they understand that they were the Achilles heel of this team last year. You know, they understood they weren't cutting it last year, and they vowed to improve. And you've started to see that improvement. And I expect that to carry over this year.
And what about Coach Bruce Arians? How's that relationship with Tom Brady?
Well, Arians will tell you that even though Brady is Tom Brady, he says, I still cuss him out like anybody else. I don't know if that has happened yet, though. I didn't get that follow-up question in. I need to hit up Coach to find out if that's actually happened. He'll use a lot of curse words and like the MF word. I mean, he finds a way. It's a term of endearment. He'll also use it if he's mad at you. You know, I think the thing about Arians is, you know, he's always been about having these human relationships with his players. And I've talked to so many people that have played with Brady. I mean, Brady's the type of guy where it's like, you know, he'll make it a point to, you know, not just get to know you. He'll get to know your family. He'll get to know your kids. He'll know your kid's name. It's important to both of them. As proficient as both of them are when it comes to X's and O's, both of them are really, really about people. Arians is one of those coaches, even though he's an older coach, he's 67 years old, he still has a very open mind, and he's not someone that's just set in his ways. When it comes to the offense, he is certainly willing to adapt some of the way he's doing things. Same thing with Byron Leftwich, who's going to be calling plays. He gives so much freedom to the quarterback in this scheme, and that's something Brady will really like and appreciate too.
I mean, Jenna, you've painted a pretty fascinating contrast there between Bruce Arians and Bill Belichick. Belichick seems to me like the withholding dad who doesn't provide the emotion and love and flexibility, but you just described Bruce Arians as somebody who not only is emotionally intelligent, but somebody who has literal yards full of toys for Tom Brady to play with and all of the flexibility in the world in this offense. It seems like Tom Brady is walking into a situation where even if he doesn't quite know where things are, he's going to enjoy exploring how to get to everything.
But Arians will tell you, don't call me a father figure. I'm the cool uncle you like to have a drink with. He will tell you that because I've asked about it before. He's like, I'm not a father figure. I'm the cool uncle you like to have a drink with.
Jenna, I appreciate you for being authentically yourself. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate the time.
Up next on ESPN Daily, from a longtime Bucks reporter and her tips for Brady to veteran NFL quarterback Josh McCown, who not only learned Tampa Bay's playbook, but also 15 others in the course of his career.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I think you're the best dunker in quarterback history. Is that right, though?
I don't know, but we can call it that, you know.
I mean, I've never seen a mixtape that's close to yours.
Inside completion, another basket. This is getting too easy for Josh McCown.
Josh McCown has played 18 seasons as an NFL quarterback, and yes, video evidence does show he can also dunk. So I feel like you should be putting that on your resume for whatever the hell it is that you plan to be doing for the rest of your life.
Maybe so. I'm going to tell you who could. Tyrod Taylor's a pretty good dunker.
Josh, we're now producing, as of right now, we're producing an NFL quarterback current and former dunk contest. I don't know why this hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I know. We need to make it happen. I hope I haven't missed my window.
I assure you that McCown has not missed his window. I mean, we're talking about a guy who came out of retirement to play for the Eagles last year, like an action movie hero who gets lured back for one more big job. So when Tom Brady, who of course spent 19 years with just one team, was quoted in Jenna's story saying he was having a little trouble learning a new playbook now that he's with the Bucks, McCown, who's played for many teams, including the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, had some hard-won gloating to do. Finally, he tweeted, something I might do better than Tom. So I started by asking McCown what he thought when he heard about Tom's struggle with the new playbook.
Poor Tom. I know the feeling. I mean, I've lived that, you know, and technically now I've had the same system a few times. It doesn't necessarily mean that every exact play and terminology is going to be the same. It just means that there's probably the most overlap of any. I had 16 or 17 offensive coordinators throughout the last 18 years. So every year in April, it's like picking up a Rosetta Stone and starting a new language and going, okay, I'm going to learn this. He's right on about how much energy it takes because he's been able to spend his springs like getting better at football and not thinking about the terminology. And when you spend time, you know, just thinking about the terminology and you're walking to the line of scrimmage and OTAs going, okay, what's the name of this play and what's this guy got and all that stuff. I think that's the part that, you know, sets guys apart. And so right now he's probably, you know, that's what probably he's done, you know, the whole summer is just learning these new terms. And the thing you can't do is try to do association, because you'll go, okay, this is that play that's like the play that I had. So there's a lot of neural pathways that need to be formed to memorize these systems that you need to have time doing. Like, he's been in it 20 years. Like, that's trying to forget a lot of stuff. So I'm sure it's extending his energy quite a bit.
So you mentioned that playbooks are like Rosetta Stones. How many Rosetta Stones did you have to learn over the course of your NFL career?
18 years of pro ball, 16 playbooks. And like I said, I think it changed every year for the first 4 years, fifth year, by years five. And then I came back around probably year 10. I had the same I was in Detroit with Mike Martz, got him again in Chicago in maybe 2010. So that was the first time I had gotten the same coordinator twice, you know, and gotten in the same offense. And even then, he had tweaked his thing so much for the 5 years. So I've got a couple of big plastic bins full of playbooks, and it's fascinating to see. And you know what the crazy thing is, Pablo? It's all the same freaking plays. Like, it's the same stuff. Like, nobody's got anything cool or different or new. Mike Martz, you know, greatest show on turf, was definitely an innovator, and he did things different. So his stuff is the most different, but I was like, it's really more how they coach it. Everybody does the same things, and it's just how they approach it. You know, it's funny to flip through them because, you know, my sons are now, you know, getting into football. They're in high school, and they'll look through and like, Dad. And I'm like, yeah, dude, it's just like, imagine walking in the line of scrimmage, you know, like seeing that play in your head, but not remember, or standing in the huddle and seeing the play in your head, but like, wait, which one am I supposed to call? And it's happened to me. I can remember in, I want to say at the Jets or maybe in Cleveland, I called a play and the dudes looked at me like crazy. I was like, oh, my bad. Like wrong system. You know, like you almost like saying it and watching their eyes and gathering what they're reflecting to you. Like, is this the right system?
Wait, so in terms of these plastic bins, if you were to give us a sense of just how many pages in all, if you had to estimate.
Oh,
how many pages is 16 different playbooks over the course of your 18 year career?
Yeah, I mean, I have one sitting on my desk right now. I flip through it and it's 200 pages, at least 300 pages. So yeah, 200, 300 pages times, you know, 16 or whatever.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's a lot. You know, there's plays that I remember from my rookie year, you know, and there's, you know, every system that I've been in, the kind of the staple plays are the ones that that made that system popular. You hold on to, and I can call them and I can remember them. So it's kind of funny how that goes. You wake up in cold sweat going, man, like, you know, what play do I call? And then you calm down. You're still laying in bed. Nobody's asking you anything. You know what I mean? So for sure.
But hold on. Now that you've volunteered that you do remember vividly at least some aspects of these playbooks, we got to do a little play call karaoke. Okay. So
yeah, let's do it.
Can you give me something from your rookie year, and can you give me something from Mike Martz's playbook, and can you give me something of your choice, another wild card? I just want to give the listener a sense of just what these languages sound like.
One play from my rookie year was twins right, orbit scat, no, so twins right orbit, key right, 024 F8, and those digits are all routes and ways that guys run. But I've also, you know, I've been in another system where that same play would be trips right, two jet, Blackbeard, or something to that effect. There's some similarity, and all of a sudden there's people that call plays by numbers and digits, and then there's people that call plays by words. And so you have this whole conflation. But that'd be one from my rookie year. The one that kind of made Mike Martz famous was the what we call in the digit system was the F post route, and that one would have been flank right, F boom, scat right, 095 F post swing. So that would have been a fun one. Let's see. My first touchdown in Candlestick Park was jack right, fire pass right, 078 F flat, and I threw it to James Hodges on F flat. That same play, Jack Wright scat, fire pass right, 078 F flat, is also known as strong right, spider two, Y banana.
Oh, I've heard of that one.
Yeah, there you go. I was going to say, we've all heard that one.
Josh, I was going to say, you could have said cuttlefish four left quintuplet 69 papaya. I don't know any of these things, but spider two Y banana, I actually remember from the whole Gruden experience.
Exactly. So, and the off chance that you play with somebody that's kind of bounced through systems like yourself, you'll have these special moments like where time stops and you say it wrong and he looks at you and he's like, I know what you're talking about. And because he's been in that system too, and you're like, oh, cool, man. Like if I drew them up on a whiteboard, they'd be all the same play. That you wouldn't know the difference. But this is how you call it in this system. This is how you call it in this system. So it's kind of funny.
So number one, I feel like you have no problem remembering very high security internet passwords. That feels like the most translatable skill. But second of all, speaking of translation, is there a career then as a playbook translator? Could someone hire you to like translate Josh McDaniels to Bruce Arians?
Quite possibly. I mean, you know, it would probably be a pretty high hourly rate, but I'm sure we could work something out.
Yes. And at the worst case, you know, I guess you could be Tom Brady's Zoom playbook studying tutor.
Exactly. I mean, that would work. That would work for me. The safety and, you know, comfort of my own home, be able to take him through his playbook. I'm pretty sure that when he hits the ground running, whenever these games do start, he's going to show that he's got this playbook thing nailed. And just like everything else that he's done in his career, he's going to have it nailed. And you know, he's going to be spinning that ball to Mike and Rob and those guys, and they're going to be killing it.
Well, Josh, thank you so much for joining me. I look forward to talking to you again when you end up inevitably learning your 17th language.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on, Pablo.
Coming up, the MAC is opting out of college football this fall. What does it mean for the rest of the sport?
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. On Saturday, in front of a tarp patterned with the slogan, "Get some action," Mid-American Conference Commissioner John Steinbrecher announced that we wouldn't be getting MACtion anytime soon. In fact, the MAC would become the very first conference in the Football Bowl subdivision to opt out of college football this fall. And for the MAC's university presidents, who voted unanimously to do this, it was a hard decision.
But this was a health and well-being decision first and foremost. As we sit here today, we don't know what this will mean financially.
And Steinbrecher's latter concern about dollars, hundreds of millions of them actually across the NCAA, that's why the rest of fall college football resembles the Black Knight from Monty Python. The sport has been bleeding out, switching to conference-only games, losing limbs, watching hundreds of athletes make demands about coronavirus safety, and yet still hoping that this pandemic was just a flesh wound. But it is not. And yesterday, after the commissioners of the Power Five conferences held an emergency meeting, an autumn without college sports of any kind finally seemed inevitable. On Saturday, ESPN reports, a vast majority of the Big Ten's university presidents had indicated that they'd vote to postpone football too, hopefully to the spring. And to be clear, this decision is up to them. Because while college football may be teetering, there is also no national plan to address those wounds. The NCAA, like the federal government, is basically letting the states decide. And so many of our conferences, like so many of our states, they need to decide how delusional they want to be. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.